This episode is brought to you by Tinder. You matched, chatted, vibe checked. Now it's time to meet IRL. So, what's stopping you? Tinder is making dating safer and easier with their excellent safety features, like Share My Date, the best way to let your friends know your plans, while Moonlight allows you to discreetly call emergency services, and Are You Sure will prompt people to think twice before sending a potentially harmful message. Explore all of the possibilities for yourself. It starts with a swipe. Download Tinder today.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at IKEA-USA.com today.
What's up, everyone? Before we get to the show, I wanted to tell you guys a little more about Ball, because I don't know if you guys know, but the can business is currently booming. It is a solid career path with less volatility than many other types of vocations. Manufacturing specialists are in high demand as a long-term trend, and Ball is opening plants and expanding assembly lines across North America as we speak, and getting experience in manufacturing is a great foundation for a growing career. Ball's offers a competitive 27.39 per hour, with potentials for increase at 6, 12, and 18 months on the job. It offers exposure to a lot of other manufacturing opportunities in their plant, and the production technician's role touches on the other stages of production, making aluminum cans and ends. So it is a great company and a great industry to get into right now if you are looking for a job. And the people that we know that work at Ball truly enjoy their experience there. And I feel like that can't be said about every industry, and that can't be said about every company. So the fact that they do, and that Ball puts so much effort into that diversity, inclusivity, and making sure that you're getting paid and raises, it's a really, really great company. So if you're interested, you can read the full description of the job and apply at jobs.ball.com and search for the word golden, or you can actually text golden to 77222 and you'll get linked to all open positions. Highly recommend checking them out. We want to make sure that you guys are taken care of, and Ball is just one of those great companies.
Nobody out. 3-2 on Charlotte.
Jokic gets it across the timeline. Gets a high pick and pop with Murray. Lindsay breaking through.
Taken away by Nathan MacKinnon. 2-on-2 with Landeskog.
He has done it again. Vaughn Miller, ladies and gentlemen. Dunk two hands. Nikola Jokic.
Save me by Grubauer with the left pad. Oh, goodness gracious me.
Take a good look. You won't see it for long. Two-run home run. Trevor Story.
Lock. End zone. Touchdown. Sudden.
Got it! Oh, man! That's from way downtown! And the blue arrow is flying at Pepsi Center!
Score! It's too good to be true! But believe it! Oh, hail Kale!
Welcome in to the Denver Sports Podcast, presented by Breckenridge Brewery. Look, guys, there's less than 10 days until Christmas. I know a bunch of you guys are going to be going to holiday parties over the next couple weeks. So be the most popular person at the party. Take a case of Breckenridge Brewery. Bring a sampler pack, an avalanche, a strawberry sky, which is my favorite. Bring anything you want. Bring some of their seltzers, and you're going to be the most popular person there. I am your host for today, and as your eyes and ears can very easily tell you, I'm not Ali Monroy. Jesse Montano, and I am joined by an all-star lineup here. Got my good friend AJ Haefeli from the DNVR Avalanche beat, Patrick Lyons from our DNVR Rockies, Harrison Wynn, DNVR Nuggets, and pretty much DNVR everything. We got D-Line. Eric, how's everyone doing today?
Yeah, let's go.
Ooh, thank you. See, that's the enthusiasm I was looking for, Eric.
That's why I'm part of all of DNVR and the rest of these.
Yeah.
Are relegated to specific beats.
just all encompassing DNVR. Well, cool, guys. I'm excited to be hosting this for the first time, taking over for Allie here. And I thought we'd kick it off with my kind of whole thing on the DNVR Avalanche beat is got some hot takes. Usually got some...
We call them bad opinions.
hey, there's a few of those that have panned out pretty well, and the rest of them we're not going to talk about. But, so I thought I'd bring a little bit of that to my first Denver sports podcast. And I want to talk to you guys today about some of the most controversial stuff that's going on right now in sports in terms of rules, how the games are played. One of the ones I got in here is, reviews, stuff like that. Just some of these that are not like social issues, but stuff that you are on one side or the other. There's really not a ton of gray area for a lot of how people feel about this.
I'm excited we're not all agreeing to light our careers on fire and talk about kneeling for the anthem.
Yeah. See, I thought about doing that and, some of the pay issues and stuff, but I was like, we'll save that for another time.
No, so what, just we're just talking about what, vaccinations or?
Yeah.
Mandates, baby. Let's do this.
Vaccinations, let's go. National anthem is what today's show is going to be about.
Let's go.
And yeah. So we'll just this will be the last show that I do ever. But no. So I'm going to start kind of with one that a little bit smaller, and then we'll kind of get a little bit more where I'm sure people will have some more differing opinions as we go. So is everyone ready? Does anybody have any final thoughts before we start this? Nope. Perfect.
I'm ready to go, man. I'm ready.
All right. So the first one I want to talk about, primarily robot umpires. And this kind of extends into the other sports in terms of, there's a lot of tracking going on now, player tracking, ball and puck tracking, things like that. And I want to know where you guys stand on it. So I did a little bit of research, and from this last MLB season, 2021, what's the name of the website? Umpire Scorecard. It started as a Twitter page. Now it's a full-on website. And basically it goes through and it tracks every MLB umpire and how accurately they call balls and strikes. Now, this has always been odd to me because this is something where the technology very clearly exists and we use it on television. For audiences watching at home. So the highest rated umpire last year in the MLB called at 95% accuracy. 95% of the time he was getting balls and strikes correctly. And this is for umpires that umped over 30 games behind the plate.
I'm just curious. Does anybody think that's a high number? Were you surprised to think that the human eye could be correct 95% of the time? Does that seem low?
So... No.
I think it's, I mean, I'm surprised that it's that high given the general incompetence of MLB umpires, but I'm not surprised that there are some out there who actually, like, if you watch an individual game, like, those guys are pretty good. Like, they're pretty good at what they do, and I think that's the problem, is that they, pretty good just isn't enough.
Now let me give a little bit more context to that number, though. So the highest is 95, the lowest is 92. The highest, the most accurate umpire still over the course of his games throughout the season got over 200 calls incorrect. While the lowest rated umpire, again, this is when umping over 30 games behind the plate, missed just shy of 400 calls. So that's kind of your spectrum there. So even at 95%, this umpire missed over 200 calls. You got them wrong based off what the computer can tell us in real time. Eric, you are very animated, so I want to hear what your thoughts are on this first.
Well, every time that I watch a baseball game, I'm like, are we just watching to see how the umpire does? Like, we know the answer, and we're just seeing if he also gets the answer correct. Like, that's the most obnoxious part, is that it's literally there, and we're just seeing how an old guy with cataracts is able to stack up to something that is not only inarguable, it is universally available. It is the fact that they put it on TV drives me so goddamn crazy. I can't even tell you. So then, if it was just like a situation where you were also just watching with your eye and you're like, eh, that looked outside, but he's right there, so that's probably right. But you're like, no, he got it wrong. So you're angry. Like, I just found myself angry the whole time. Like,
but did he? But that's did the he? Question. Is it inarguable? Because that's just a two-dimensional rectangle. That's suggesting where the strike zone is. Suggesting?
No, it is not suggesting. It is saying in that slice of 3D, like it crossed through that rectangle at that exact place. Are you saying that there should be it only has to go through the cube at some point, right?
Look,
I mean,
I'm not trying to question Subaru or their Subaru strike zone.
Makes me crazy.
They've not funded the proper technology at Coors Field and the other 29 ballparks around the nation. But no, that is just, again, to give you a general idea, because it's hard to know what's a strike and what isn't a strike if you're just looking at the catcher setting up. So the box is a helpful tool, but it is by no means the be-all, end-all. And
it could be. So, it could be the end-all, so be-all.
Are you saying that the strike zone isn't necessarily defined, that it's constantly moving?
No, I mean, to a degree, yes. And this is one of the issues that why we don't see the robotic umps or the cyborg umps, as someone, one of my guests recently on the DNVR Rockies podcast said, I'm all welcoming for cyborgs. But is they've got to figure out the technology to account for a 5'8" Jose Altuve and a 6'7" Aaron Judge. And those are two different strike zones. But when you watch a game on TV, the D-line box, as we'll brand it here on the DNVR Sports Podcast, the D-line box is identical for both those guys, the shortest guy and the tallest guy. And we know that that's not a true strike zone. It should be basically letters at the top of the knees.
Are you saying that they're unable to figure out how to move the box? That's the technology they need to work out?
Not unable to figure it out. They just have it, man. They use the same box for every at bat.
Right, but so if they're going to make that the official strike zone, couldn't they then just adjust it per player? Is that possible? Don't we possess this technology as well?
It exists, but it's not as far along as we would like. We want it right now, but it's just not there, unfortunately. Also, too, we're talking about television technology for the viewer to see what a strike zone looks like. And then there's the actual three-dimensional strike zone, because home plate isn't a square, right?
It's a plate.
Home plate. Yeah. Well, I don't know what you would call that.
A home plate.
Well, in three-dimensional form, what would that shape be?
Is that a
three-dimensional home plate?
Some kind of prism. Look, I want to call it cylindrical. I'm looking for a fancy word like that. That's not really on the tip of my tongue. But yeah, it's a very complicated process. And again, this isn't something that moves in a straight line. We're talking about off-speed pitches, breaking balls. And so there's almost a fourth dimension to the fact that the strike zone is three dimensions, and then you've got this baseball coming in at all kinds of weird angles and batters with different heights.
Passes
it's complicated.
Through it. Does it go through it? Does it not go through it?
My issue is like if the technology is not to be believed, can we take it off the goddamn broadcast then? So like people don't just sit back and are outraged the idea that this guy got it wrong every time.
So that's kind of another side of my angle, because I wanted to equate this to other sports. And in the NHL, there's a term that is well known as the parallax angle, where depending on the replay,
I have no idea what that means for the record.
I don't want to say it's well known.
I have never heard that term in my life.
That was the word I was looking for with home plate. A three-dimensional home plate is called a parallaxal angle. I think that was the word. Yeah, there you go.
Hey, you're welcome. So amongst hockey circles, that's a pretty well-known term, because what it means is that when the lines are painted on the ice, when they're getting the ice ready, then there's another layer that is put on top. So if you're not looking at that from directly overhead, certain camera angles can make the line look like it's in a little bit of a different place, because it actually sits below the surface of the ice. So in 2004, in the Stanley Cup final, there was a very controversial play that from some angles it looked like the puck had gone in the net and would have won the Calgary Flames a Stanley Cup, but from other angles it looked like it didn't fully cross the line. So using the example of you know the strike zone in baseball, is it possible that maybe just improving on technology that we already have in place, using chips inside pucks and putting chips in the ice. If this chip goes fully across that chip, there is no doubt there's a signal. It's a goal. You don't even need instant replay. Back all the way back in 1998, the New York Football Jets were awarded a touchdown when it was actually the helmet of a player that they were seeing in the replay and not the ball. And obviously that's 1998, so that's before a lot of this technology. But again, that was a big play in
that was
in
the inciting incident that caused the NFL to institute replay.
Yeah, and so it's one of those things where can we use some of this technology that's already existing to help make sure we get some of these calls right without even having to go to replay? Or do we just like it saying, hey, look, it's the human eye and it is what it is, and it's kind of ever changing depending on the situation?
Yeah, the technology, it might not be perfect, as Patrick was saying, but it seems to me it's clearly better than what we have right now. Like the technology, the strike zone, whatever, it's clearly better than having umpires calling balls and strikes. And in sports, I just don't get why, and this goes across all sports, when, you know, there's better ways to do things, that stuff doesn't get implemented. I mean, like the classic example is, how could you not put a chip in a football to tell you when it crosses the first down marker? And instead we just have referees just guessing. I mean, like, yep, that shit could definitely be done. And yeah, like we might not have the perfect technology for it, but it's definitely going to be a lot better than what we have right now. And I think that's the same exact reasoning for robot umpires.
We're operating though at around 93-94% efficiency. That's pretty good. I'm not saying
is it that good.
100% obviously would be better, but we're not there yet. And as far as putting chips in baseballs, it's different when you're talking about hockey pucks. I mean, they use almost quite literally one basketball per game, I would imagine. Football, not very many. Hockey puck, not very many. MLB goes through just under 1 million baseballs per year, so you know that starts to become a lot insane. Less cost effective if you're putting chips in baseballs. It would work, but again, what is the benefit? Does baseball make more money because people now watching the game at home know exactly where the strike zone is? And I enjoy baseball more now because that strike was a strike every time it's a strike. Baseball is poetry. It doesn't have to be perfect in that way. And we kind of just live in a world now where we do want everything to be perfect, because if something does not go our way, we love whining about it.
Would it make the sport better? Like, that's what I always come back to. And that would just unequivocally make the sport better, in my opinion.
The thing about sports is that a lot of people build their entire belief system around sports. They it makes people crazy when they think that there are scandals, people are cheating to get ahead in sports, because you know, you sort of like look to your understanding of sports is your understanding of the universe itself. Like, do you think, are you able to predict what's going to happen based on all the factors that are presented to you? And then when something is called incorrectly or something goes against what you know to be true, it's like so infuriating that like that's not, to me, that does not enhance the experience. It just feel like a sense of being robbed or a sense of like injustice. That doesn't help the sport. Like, the sport is the thing that happens when, the ball is hit or the chaos ensues and you don't know what's going to happen and the human beings make the play or whatever. Like, is he going to catch it? He's not going to catch it. But the thing, like, that's why you want to have like the tent poles, like the lines, the things that are like not movable, that are not arguable. And then everything else that happens should be the part that's the poetry. The part that is not the poetry are the parts that are the confines. Like, that to me is what is so obnoxious. And you know, again, frankly, like when I watch baseball, it drives me insane. Like, it just drives me insane. You're like, they're like, wow, that was what a terrible call. And you just sit there and you're like, yeah, that call sucked. And then you just sit there and you're mad.
And everybody knows it. And everybody just has to like eat this. Yeah. And it's just, you're
cool.
It goes both ways. It does go both ways too. Like, your team does benefit from it. And we don't think about that quite as much.
I'd rather just be like, the end, because then if you know sports then end up becoming fodder for argument, and then if it's like you're having a conversation about something that is not about the players that you have chosen to represent you as a person and the players that the other people have chosen to represent them. It's these like outside forces that are not part of the conflict. Like we're talking about them, like that, that sucks. That's like what lawyers do. That's like, who wants that?
Well, and then there's the other part of this that nobody has mentioned yet of gambling. Now the importance of the calls does extend beyond the actual playing field, because people are there's a huge industry that's growing where people are putting a lot of money on again across all sports. Obviously the bionic umpires are the easiest one to kind of point to, but you know, there's situations now all across sports where someone getting the call right or wrong literally determines if people win or lose hefty sums of money. So it's just there's another side to it that's really starting to grow as well.
It's true. And just quickly, like the sport that gets this the best and has absolutely solved it, and I wish that every sport would look at, is tennis. Tennis, if you allow, if there's a call that's out, like every player gets some number of challenges per match. I'm not even sure how many, but like a ball is called out, the umpire calls it, the head umpire holds it up, and then the player can just call for a replay. They quickly show it. They show it in three-dimensional space, Patrick. They're able to get all angles and show where the ball bounces, the angle at which the ball stretched when it hit. Did it
hit
any part of the line?
It's a flat court.
Well, the ball is not flat. The court is is flat. You're right about that.
The impact it makes on the ground is
but not only that, like nobody has to go under a hood. It just shows on the jumbotron. It goes, and then everybody cheers.
The crowd literally claps in anticipation of the Hawkeye result. Yes,
it's like, but tennis also has 18 small children around on a court helping out two professionals. So let's not give them too much credit.
Yeah, they're not those. Those dudes are like,
and dude,
the line judges are just like umpires out in the field, like, you know, telling you if a ball is fair or not.
Totally. And they get it wrong all the time.
Yeah, it's the same thing. They challenge those calls too.
Well, hey, so I think Harrison and Eric are heavily in favor of going to a lot more of the technology. AJ made good arguments on behalf of both. And Patrick, I think you're kind of saying there's still just too many variables to go fully that direction yet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all fine. I'm fine with it if again the technology is there. It just, you got to keep in mind the naked eye is doing pretty good. Again, it's not perfect. We know that, but 94% is probably better than most people would think. And we only remember the calls that go against rather than the calls maybe that aid. And there's just so many more variables that go into baseball than other games, because each pitch in and of itself is an event.
The only reason that Jesse and I know anything about parallax is because it became a thing in an Avs game that benefited the Avs.
Yeah, seriously. Well, hey, let's take this moment, as it did benefit the Avs, and had gambling been legalized then, it would have benefited a lot of people. With that, make sure you're heading on over to DraftKings. Football fans, I'm sure we all love an action-packed, high-scoring NFL game.
Don't bet on balls and strikes,
though.
Don't bet on baseball games, because it's left up to human error.
Avoid betting.
Not only
on,
do you have to guess right, but you have an 8% chance if the Borsk guy is working that game. He just gets that call wrong anyway.
With the latest no-brainer from DraftKings Sportsbook, an official betting partner of the NFL, you'll be a winner once a single point is scored. New customers who bet just $1 on any team to score can win $100 in free bets. It's that simple. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today. Use promo code DNVR. Bet $1 on any team to score and win $100 in free bets if they score. If they score, you score with promo code DNVR this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older. Colorado only. New customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. And of course, if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Also wanted to remind you guys about our great partners over at Mint Mobile. This holiday season, the best deal in wireless can only be found at Mint Mobile. Right now, when you switch to Mint Mobile, you can buy any 3-month plan, you'll get another 3 months for free. As the first company to sell premium wireless services online only, Mint Mobile lets you order from home and save a ton of money with phone plans starting at just $15. Look, guys, I've worked in the mobile industry before, and I can tell you honestly, there is nobody that is doing what Mint is doing right now. They've got the attention of a lot of the big carriers because of their customer service, the fact that you can do it all from home, and just their unbelievable prices. Again, for a limited time, buy any three-month Mint Mobile plan and get three more months free by going to mintmobile.com/DNVR. That's mintmobile.com/DNVR. Cut your wireless bill to just $15 a month at mintmobile.com/DNVR. This is the DNVR Sports Podcast brought to you by Breckenridge Brewery. We're doing some controversial topics here today, talking about just some of the rules and the different things that we've got in place in sports. And I think already we've got a little bit of a split here based on robot umpires, chips and pucks and stuff like that. Here's another one for you guys. So a few weeks ago, I was watching the 2021 Iron Bowl, Alabama and Auburn, which if any of you guys watched it or saw the replays or highlights, it went to triple overtime before Alabama ultimately won. Shocker. But what struck me as odd was I don't know how new they are, but the college football overtime rules. Basically, it starts with one quarter where each team gets the ball on the other team's 25. You get one drive to score a touchdown. Obviously, you have one first down available to you. And then the other team gets the ball, gets a chance to score. If it still remains tied, then it goes to a second overtime where you have to score and go for a two-point conversion. If it's still tied after that, they just start placing the ball on the three-yard line and you just trade two-point conversion opportunities until you eventually have a winner. Personally, I thought it was awesome. I thought it was super exciting. I thought it was a ton of fun to once it got down into that, because I actually think it went to four overtimes. So they each traded two-point conversion chances a couple times. And it got me thinking, for regular season, obviously playoffs are a bit of a different animal. But in the NHL, we see it where the first, when the game first goes to overtime, it goes down to 3-on-3. Still no winner. It goes to a shootout. That is really the only professional sport that has anything similar to what we see in the college football overtime. So my question to you guys is, would you like to see something like that implemented for regular season overtime and extra innings? In the NBA, you could take it down to 3-on-3, then 2-on-2. The NFL, you could kind of match what college football does. And honestly, for baseball, I thought you could do something like where you get fewer outs as we go deeper into these innings. So eventually you get it down to where each team gets one out. You're eventually going to get someone to jack a homer or, you know, hit a double and then ground or something like that and win a game. So your guys' thoughts on just overtimes in general, because the shootout is something that's pretty split amongst the NHL community. Some people like it. Some people hate seeing games end in what they refer to as a skills competition.
Yeah, with baseball, you want to encourage the scoring. And I think right now they just have a mild tweak. I wouldn't put it on the same level as the NHL, like you're saying, Jesse, where they have the runner on second base in the 10th inning. So you've got a runner in scoring position and you don't even need to get a base hit and you can get a guy home, a ground ball to second base, fly ball to right field. You scored a run and now we're going to break the tie. But, you know, to kind of take that idea, as you said, with the NHL one step further, you could say, all right, now you only have eight fielders, you know, from the 10th inning going on. It's pretty radical. And, you know, baseball doesn't really do radical things like that, but that certainly would increase scoring if you now all of a sudden have two outfielders or you've got three outfielders, but, you know, no second baseman on the right side of the infield. So you could kind of tweak that. Again, if the goal is just to increase scoring, to break a tie, there's a couple different ways to go about that in baseball, some more extreme than others.
Do you like how it currently is, Patrick, when the guy starts on second?
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I think it's again, it's a good way to keep the game going forward. The first time when I heard that, I thought, oh no, what about the pitcher's earned run average? How are they going to work this out statistically? I was more concerned about the numbers than anything else. And ultimately they just said, well, it just counts as like an inherited runner. It's like you give up an unearned double to second base essentially. So it won't count against you. Yeah. You might earn a loss, if you happen to give up that run. But we also know the win and loss statistic for pitchers isn't really that important. So I think it's a good way to keep the game going a little bit, you know, forward. Yeah. And again, just keep the bases moving a little bit more, make it more of a carousel. And yeah, I think it was a really smart decision that benefits everybody. We want to be romantic about these games that, you know, go five or six overtime, and in football, that's fine because that means usually there's scoring done or there's a dynamic defensive stop. But in baseball, if nobody's scoring any runs and it goes 17, 18 innings, that's a miserable experience to be staying up until 2, 3 a.m. in the morning to watch a 17 inning affair. It sounds cool talking about it, but the reality is that sucks. So you know what? Put a runner in scoring position on second base. It's fair for both teams. Let's move forward with that.
I love the change. It actually got to the point where when games were tied, I would turn on games that I wouldn't otherwise care at all about just because there was the possibility of something cool happening. And the NHL has the same effect. If the Avs aren't playing on a night and the NHL has games that are getting ready to go to overtime, I'll fire those games up. I'll stop whatever I'm doing and watch 3-on-3 and then the shootout, just because it's an exciting finish to a game. It's a guarantee, you know, somebody's going to win, and it's a fun finish. And baseball putting the runner on second base had that effect. I didn't like it at first, and then watched a couple of games with it and was like, yep, this is what it needed. Yeah. It feels better. It's not baseball. And look, there are other considerations sometimes. I'm sorry that the purity of your game has been tarnished a little bit, but sometimes you got to just you got to get on with it. These 16, 17 inning games, they're not great for the guys either. You're throwing position players out there, and you've got guys who are doing things that you're not paying money to watch a third baseman lob 60 mile an hour meatballs at guys. Like, because you ran out of arms because you managed a game thinking surely this won't end in 18 innings. You know, would it? Like, I think it's been great for baseball. The shootout, like, I kind of wish it was 10 minutes of 3-on-3 overtime, but now that the coaches have kind of ruined it, I'm a little glad that the shootout is still there as a guardrail for insanity.
I don't talk too much baseball, but what do you guys think about the Pioneer League, which is they're no longer under the banner of Major League Baseball and Minor League Baseball. It's pro baseball, but it's not, you know, not the good young prospects. So this year they did, for the first time, they did a home run derby after the ninth inning. You pick one guy to go out. Do you like that idea? Would that be cool?
I don't know. I don't know about after the ninth inning, but if they did that after
12,
you mean like 12?
That sounds like what I would do in like my beer league softball game. A winner.
Would that make you more interested? Would you guys watch that?
If they didn't do it immediately after the ninth, if they gave them a couple innings to try to settle it normally, I think that'd be kind of fun to watch.
I think after 12 innings, I think it's a pro. 12 innings with the runner starting on second base. If you guys can't figure it out beyond that, just jack some homers. It's the same thing as a shootout.
My favorite part would be like, you know, Charlie Blackmon hitting that homer there on the last swing and celebrating and lifting up his 64-year-old pitching coach over his shoulders. Like, we did it together, everyone. It's ridiculous, but maybe it injects some life.
Harrison, Eric, you guys' thoughts on, like, you know, again, if the NFL did something like that or the NBA, because I know the NBA can have some long overtime runs in the regular season.
4-on-4?
It doesn't really happen that often, to be honest. Like, you'll have a couple, maybe like one game every season that goes into a double OT, like one Nuggets game every season. But other than that, you get a couple OT games here and there. NBA overtime is perfect. It's 5 minutes. There's going to be a winner after that, like 99% of the time. It doesn't really need any tweaking. The one thing I would say is I wouldn't mind if each player was given an extra foul when the game went to overtime.
Yeah,
that's a good idea.
Harrison, would that slow play down though a little bit, because you'd be having more fouls and guys would be going to the line more?
It just sucks because you get six fouls for a 48-minute game, and then it sucks when, you know, you have your best players like not playing in like in overtime, like potentially, you know, they could pick up a quick foul there and they're just done. It kind of sucks.
So you're saying, just kind of almost kind of like reset the fouls, but on like a different set of rules so that some of those
just give them an extra one. So if somebody's already fouled out, give them a seventh foul and let the best players determine the games.
Yeah, if you're at five fouls heading into overtime and you get a six in overtime, you're still on the floor.
I like that.
Yeah, but I agree. I mean, there's the Elam ending that they've kicked around a little bit. The idea that it's just you have a number that you have to get to. The first team that gets to that number is the winner. It's not determined by time.
Yeah, it's actually a really cool idea, and I'm probably in favor of it. What it actually does, it eliminates garbage time pretty much. So, you know, it also ensures every game ends on a game winner. So, like, you take the score when there's, like, 5 minutes left or something, and you add, like, 15 points to whoever's ahead, and whoever gets to that number first wins. And so when you hit a basket to get to that number, say you're at 60 and then you have to get to 75, you hit the basket to get to 75 and the game's over. So every game ends on a game winner, and there's not like the art of stalling the clock and just winding the clock down. You're trying to get to a number.
Is this street rules win by two?
No.
Yeah, it is win by
two. Oh, is it?
You have to win by
two? Oh, I said that as a joke.
Can you tip in and they go back to zero?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think it is actually.
I don't think so either. I don't think that's how it works.
Are the Mavericks waiting in another locker room, like saying they got next? What are these rules? I'm liking all of this. This is good.
Definitely.
Yeah, I actually really like that because that could just kind of be a fun.
Yeah, it's a cool idea.
Yeah, that makes for some fun innings. So it sounds like everyone's kind of in agreement. We don't need to prolong these regular season overtimes. Yeah. Now I will say, like, I am not a big fan of, like, a couple of years ago in the Olympics, the U.S. women's hockey team won a gold medal in a shootout. And while it was super fun and exciting, I just can't imagine losing a gold medal in a shootout, like, if you're on the other side of that. It was
I can't either because they didn't.
Watch.
Sucks to suck, Canada.
AJ, you might feel that one. Yeah, dude, careful with your anti-Canadian comments.
She did not appreciate.
I was going to say, where is she? I hope she's upstairs or something like that. I didn't realize she's not upstairs.
No.
So it sounds like we'd all be in favor of leagues doing something, maybe with the exception of the NBA, because they just the pace of that game as it is. Do something to kind of move all that along.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Cool. The only change that I would make with hockey is I would make in any one goal or tied game, any penalty in the last two minutes.
Yep.
Any penalty in the last 2 minutes, a team has to kill all 2 minutes of the penalty.
I love that. You've talked about that for a long time now, and I think that's a great, great call. Cause you see teams do that all the time. They'll take an egregious penalty to save a goal with just a few seconds left, knowing that you have to kill 5 seconds of a power play that just saved
you win
a goal.
You win a face-off and you clear the puck and it's good. Yeah. And the other minute and 55 seconds of that penalty are totally irrelevant. I think a team – and if the team scores and they tie the game, then you just go into overtime like normal. If they don't score, then the game just ends and you have the exciting finish of – a team is, you know, and if the team that's killing the penalty scores into the empty net, then the game ends. Like, so there's an extra element of, like, do you pull the goaltender?
Yeah.
Do you have the goalie pulled? Because at the end of games, that's typical strategy, is that you pull him. But if you give up the goal in the game, in the time that goes beyond the 60 minutes, and the team scores into the empty net, the game ends right there. If they tie it, the game goes into overtime. And then if neither of those things happen and the score remains, then the game just ends. But the incentivizing of taking penalties in the last 2 minutes, because it's so hard. If you have a wide open scoring chance and a guy just tomahawks his stick with 4 seconds to play, the risk reward here is totally out of whack.
Yeah.
So I've always thought that they should change it so that it doesn't really affect overtime and shootout. I would just leave all that be, but extend the games.
Count for overtime as well?
Yeah, it would.
If you take a penalty with 4 seconds left in overtime.
Yeah, I think it. I would say yeah. This because it's the same situation. You know, you can't reward the guy taking the penalty, and in that situation, you would. So I would say yeah. You extend the game. Now, I think that just the NHL officials being as predictable as they are, they just would stop calling them. But at that point, like at least there's something in place. You know, you can't stop the officials if they're not going to call the damn game as it's supposed to be. They already don't. So, but yeah. I think that would be a good change. And I mean, you're talking about it doesn't get any more exciting of an ending than that, where, you know, you're trying to kill the penalty. You think about the recent Avs games as they've been trying to finish off the last couple of one goal games. If they get into that, they get into that extra time beyond 60 minutes, like they had against the Panthers, then, you know, if they score into the empty net and the game just ends, it's euphoria. If they give up the goal, you have to go into overtime. So Just a small tweak that I've always thought would be good for the game.
We didn't necessarily mention NFL tweaks to their overtime, but when you talked about the NBA and the Elam ending, I thought you were talking about some kind of football rule of like. I mean, maybe we should call the Jason Elam ending
and come in and kick a
63-yard field goal. It's almost like, can you name that tune where? If you remember that game show, it'd be like, okay, I can name that tune in 4 notes, all right, 3. Yeah. So basically you go, all right, how far do you want your kicker to go out? All right, 64. God. All right, I'll do it. 65. You know what? Go out and kick it. And so yeah. It's just all on the line for one kicker. And the, you know, each team kind of goes back and forth with how far they think their kicker can go.
It's like a game of horse. But no.
That would be awesome, man. it's better. Honestly, it's probably better than what we have right now because in the year 2021, an NFL game can end in a tie. I don't know how this is still a thing. I just have no idea.
And they should need to smash each other's craniums together again for another 15 minutes to try to find a winner. So you know what? Leave it up to the kickers. Have fun.
Yeah, perfect.
Jason Elam ending.
Jason Elam ending. I love that. I also love sexy pizza. We have sexy pizza at every Broncos tailgate we host this year, and it is delicious. Seriously, I do love sexy pizza. When I lived downtown, that was one of my go-tos. Walk over to the sexy pizza window, order a slice, order a full pie. It was easily one of my go-tos, one of my favorite places to stop. If you're looking to have sexy pizza support your organization or event, go to sexy pizza, www.sexy.pizza and check out their about page for the donations link and see how sexy pizza can support your cause. Not just downtown, stop by any of their 4 Denver locations, Capitol Hill, Old South Pearl, Jefferson Park, and Park Hill, with a new location coming in Trinidad very soon. Again, this is the DNVR Sports Podcast brought to you by Breckenridge Brewery, Jesse Montagna with Eric, AJ, Patrick, and Harrison. I got one last one for you guys before we jump out of here for the day. We talked a little bit about it earlier, and this is honestly the big one for me. Video review. We've had a couple kind of infamous examples in Denver sports over the last decade or so. 2008, Matt Holliday, did he touch home plate? If video review would have been available to the MLB and its umpires, how would that game have ended differently? And then obviously Game 7, Avalanche Sharks, 2019. Gabe Landeskog, a player who is leaving the playing surface, his replacement has already come onto the ice. As he's waiting to get in kind of a crowded door at the bench, he is technically ruled offside for what would have been a Game 7 tying goal in kind of the waning minutes there. It ends up coming back, and the Avs go on to lose Game 7. So there's a lot of conversation around video review. Should we even have it? Do we just leave it to the human eye and the calls that are made on the field? Should we, if we're going to have it, do we expand it? If we say, okay, cool, we want to make sure we get every call right, how do you extend that to penalties? You know, spotting of the ball, offsides, goalie interference, things like that. So I want to hear your guys' thoughts, pro or against video review. Is it slowing the game down too much, or is it making sure that we're getting the calls right?
Well, I'll answer. So for me, whenever there's not video review, everyone cries until it comes and until it's there. Like not having video review is so you just feel like your hands are tied behind your back when something is so egregiously wrong. And you're like, well, what are you going to do? But then every time that video review is implemented, it's done so in such a strange manner where some things are reviewable, other things are not reviewable. And the way that they review the calls are just so slow and terrible. And it's like, it's clear that there should be some sort of review ability for every game, because without it, you just descend into madness when something is just so awful. But like, I don't understand like why there just needs to be a czar of review that either is not in the stadium, is, you know, like when they go and they send it to New Jersey during football games or whatever, somebody who's not, you know, privy to the emotion that's inside the stadium, that can make a quick call and doesn't have to like go under the hood, comes back, and you're like, dude, come on, like, what are we doing here? This takes forever. Everybody at home has seen the call or seen the play now 10 times before the old guy has even gotten under the hood. And then more often than not, they'll be so cowardly about it that they'll just be like, well, whatever we call them on the field, it's too close to call. And you're like, dude, that's the whole goddamn point, is that it's always too close to call. You just like step up, make a goddamn call. We can all see what's happening here. If it's ever too close, I hate that. When it's a super duper close call, they always just default back to, well, you know, what was called on the field is what we end up going with when we all know that was the whole point, is that you couldn't tell on the field. So why are we reviewing it? Yeah. So they're just like, they have better technology. We don't need to have the same refs making the call under the hood at the same time. Like baseball is like they've gotten it a little bit better where the old guy just goes and just puts the headset on and is told what it is.
I love how we're assuming on this show that every ref is just old. They are.
That's like a whole nother topic. It's like what it takes to become the highest level of umpire or referee in any one of these sports. Like it ends up being these like older guys that have been around the block for so long that like.
I think that's only true in baseball, man. That's just not true in the other sports.
Yeah, NBA? Eric, you stumbled on two brilliant ideas. One, we need young women instead of these old men. And also, you just invented ref zone. So, we can watch all the highlights and keep up with a million games in red zone. Well, the refs, they're waiting for the phone call, and it's already been 2 minutes into the play where they need to replay. Like, looking. Ref zone.
Just put an AirPod in. Like, hey, what'd you guys see? Okay, cool. Like, and then you just.
That's how old guys talk, too.
AirPods. It's true. As an old guy, I can say.
Well, and then there's the other element of it too, where like I know for me in the NHL, it drives me nuts because they do some of these like offside reviews where one, speaking of technology, the NHL is a multi however many billions of dollars a year league, and they have these cameras on the blue line that are like 10 megapixels.
The first cameras ever made.
Yeah. Like trying to break down if a play was onside or not. And it's literally like zoomed in 50 times and they're doing frame by frame. And it begs a question of like, are we upholding the letter of the rule or the spirit of the rule? Because that guy being offside by this much had no impact on the play. The guy didn't even touch the puck. Should that really factor in? But then on the other side, yes, that is how the rule is written. And do you have to call it to that, or do you call it based on the spirit of the rule?
I mean, I think the NHL offside thing needs to be tweaked in that, I'm good with any of the regular offside stuff. But anything that's longer than about 6 seconds, anytime they're longer in the zone, longer than about 5 or 6 seconds, you can't tell me that this was meaningful at this point. Like, you had time to defend it. Like, if they score in transition within 2 or 3 seconds of entering the zone, obviously the zone entry played a huge role in that and should be, if that's offside, then that's offside, even if it's by, you know, however much. But it, for the NHL, we've seen how many times that it happens. It happens a couple times every week where something, you know, is a goal gets called back because of a puck that entered the zone. And it was technically, they go back and look at it and it was offside, but they've been in the zone for 9 seconds, you know, and you're just looking at it and you're like, this had nothing to do with anything. They had 9 seconds to defend the play here. Like, this is absurd that they get bailed out like that again. So I think the offside thing, it should be tweaked. You wrote in your piece the other day that there needs to be a time limit on challenges. It needs to be 30 seconds from the time that the goal is scored and they start looking at replays. They've got 30 seconds. None of this Gerard Gallant gets 2 minutes to decide to make the easiest challenge call ever. And you know, it just, they're for hockey. I think hockey's mostly fine. It's just some tweaks there. Like, if you know, pick the length of time. Obviously it's going to be arbitrary and it's going to suck for, you know, for a team that gives up a big goal where it's been 5 seconds and the rule is 4. But that's, you got to draw it somewhere. And that's where I would say just have it at 5 or 6 seconds. And then, and then go from the, you know, and then cap how long these replays can go, because the slowing down of the game. All right. Well, that shit's arbitrary. Just put a time limit on the thing. Like, you know, okay. Hey, If you need 4 minutes of extremely high definition looks, then it's not definitive either way. So if you can't clearly look at it and see it within the first 30 to 60 seconds, if you look at more than 4 angles and you don't have an answer, you're not going to have one, and then move on.
Well, then the other thing too, obviously, is if you're going to review it, you have to get the call right. How many times have we seen in the last 2 years from the NHL? Where the NHL has had to put out statements after plays were reviewed saying, hey, we got that review wrong. That should have counted or that shouldn't have counted. Sorry about that. So it's like, if you're going to review it, at least get it right in the review. Patrick, Harrison, how are you guys seeing this impact the MLB and the NBA?
Well, the NBA went all in on replay a couple years ago, and it was a disaster because in the fourth quarter of a game, after every judgment call, every player on the floor was spinning their finger asking for a review. And like, it was just ridiculous. Every fourth quarter took an hour because every single questionable play was getting reviewed. Now, the NBA deserves credit because they fixed it. They said only the official can instigate a review. And honestly, it's completely fixed the end of NBA games. They take like a quarter of the time that they used to. And yeah, some of those calls are going to be missed, but it's just kind of what happens. It's the human error that referees have at the end of games. I will say though, just across sports, having instant like replay review at the end of games, it's integral. And in like the first quarter and the first half, it's not as integral for me. Like, if you're going to have it, just have it at the end of the games and get it right then. Like, that's when it really matters.
It's interesting you mentioned that too, Harrison, about the end of games, because a postseason game and a team's entire season ended on the final play of a game that wasn't even reviewable because it was more of a subjective call by an umpire. The San Francisco Giants have the best record in all of baseball with 107 wins. They go down to game 5 against the Los Angeles Dodgers. Check swing by Wilmer Flores.
The check swing is so wild because, like, correct me if I'm wrong, Patrick, do you even have a good angle on that when you're standing on the line? Like, do you even have a perfect angle?
The photograph that was released, you look and you go, he didn't swing, but that wasn't a great angle at all. It seemed like it was in the photo. And then you look at a better angle and you go, actually, no, he did go. And so you're actually putting out poor information, which ties back around to our first conversation about the Subaru strike zone being kind of poor information and just kind of, you know, being the focus of all this conversation. So baseball's done a better job. They need to be a little bit quicker on some of the reviews with the slowing down of play. But Jesse, you kind of said it earlier, like, you know, sports betting is huge. And so one of the things that seems like it's could be changing in baseball is the time of game. Hey, let's have these games go get a little bit quicker, have a pitch clock. So, which is good. You want the game to flow a little bit better, but the longer the game's going on, the more people can, you know, gamble on the games. So this problem that baseball has, you know, is a problem because they're losing viewers, but they may be making a lot more money on the back end with the gambling if the games do happen to go on a little bit longer. So,
It replays the gamblers.
That was Harrison Wind from DNVR.
Cool, guys. I know we've gotten a little bit long here. Anybody have any kind of last thoughts on review? You know, the NHL expanded it to be able to review 5-minute major penalties a couple of years ago. So it seems like review is growing rather than shrinking. Any kind of last thoughts?
I think all of the sports have dumb little loopholes where you end up in some situations where you're watching a review and you're like, hey, there's not a penalty on this at all. And there's no recourse for the officials to be like, are bad. And I think that like the big problem here is that you're sitting at home, you're watching in high definition, you're watching six different camera angles in real time. And you're able to process what's going on. You don't need an official on the ground to tell you that this is a foul or not a foul or a penalty anymore. You can clearly look at this and say, this is what's up. And then when you cut back to the game and they give very limited or in hockey's case, no explanation whatsoever, make a decision that makes you go, LOL, what? And that's the end of it. Like, I think that all this is a thing that I think all the sports need to be doing is that all of their officials, their head official needs to be subject to post-game media scrum, because you have everybody else in the building is accountable for anything that happens except those guys. They get to make it. Tony Brothers gets to throw Nikola Jokic out of every game. And it doesn't matter. He doesn't ever have to answer for it. He doesn't ever have to explain himself. He doesn't like the fact that he clearly has beef with this particular player. He never has to answer for it. He never has to step up to a microphone and explain his actions. The NHL is called a goal in an Avs Senators game where a shot was never even taken. And the official never has to come out and explain how that's supposed to be counted as a goal. How we're just supposed to assume that a puck just can just slide across the line just in this fantasy world that didn't exist. And it was just the lack of accountability for officials across all sports is a thing. Like Joe West and Angel Fernandez are horrific at their jobs, and they should not be, you know, they should have post-game scrums. Yeah. Those guys, the fact that you can name officials, that you know who they are at this point, it's never good. You don't ever know who a referee is because he's good at his job.
Yeah,
you only know when they're bad.
If Jesse went through the list of those umpires that are at the 95th and 94th percentile, most of them I don't know by their first name because they're anonymous. They're doing what they're supposed to be doing. But like you said, AJ, it's the ones that kind of inject their personality and they do the wrong things a lot that you do know, and they should be held accountable. They should be made available to the media. I'm all for that one, AJ. Yeah.
I mean, Angel Hernandez has a YouTube compilation of his own. You could literally make one of Tony Brothers throwing Nikola Jokic out at this point of games. You could make a YouTube compilation. You can just make one because it exists, and he's never once had to answer for it.
What is he going to say? What is Tony Brothers going to say?
All I want is the fact that every head coach, Nikola Jokic gets thrown out of the game. Guess what he has to go do? He has to go answer questions about it. Yeah. So what I want is that I what is he going to say? I don't care. But I want him to have to answer questions on the record in front of everybody else. Put him in that spot where he has to be accountable for the decisions that he made that affect the outcome. Whether we like it or not, the officiating crews of all sports are the third team that plays in every single game. They have an impact on every single outcome, but they don't ever have to say anything about it. They never have to answer questions about it. So I don't know that it would make any huge difference, but they get to hide behind anonymity at all times. They are fully protected by every single league, and it's absurd. Mm-hmm. Every one of us, every single, even in the media, we are held accountable to everything that we do, and we aren't playing in the game. We have no effect on the outcome. All we do, we literally are paid to talk about the games, and we have more accountability than those guys do.
No, I agree with that. I get what you're saying too, of like, yeah, what are they really going to say? But, you know, in some of those games where Jokic has gotten tossed, hey, you tossed out Nikola Jokic again. What did you see tonight that, you know, said that he should have, that he was, you know, should have been tossed or should have been teed up or whatever it was? I've been an advocate for that for a while as well, because I just think that you make them be accountable for their actions. You know, there was a goal that the Avs had called back a couple years ago that, again, the NHL had to issue an apology saying – that shouldn't have been called back. And it actually was against the Blues, who they ended up having to beat in game 82 of that year to get into the playoffs. So if the Avs would have lost that game 82, you literally could have gone all the way back in the season and pointed to the call the officials on the ice got wrong after review and said that literally cost them a playoff spot. So I agree. You know, hey, right after the game, the rule reads this, but you guys called it that. Why did you do that? And just make them answer it. I agree. John Libka was the MLB umpire that had the highest efficiency last year in over 30 Libka games. Yeah. You know,
John as Libka. As one does, name. I guess.
Yeah. Cool, guys. I think that's about all we've got for today. Appreciate the four of you guys jumping on, hanging out with me a little bit longer than we normally go on this show. Hope you guys all enjoyed it. Hope this was some fun conversation for you guys all to have. Want to remind you to head over to ddnvr.com. Head over to the shop. Put together a gift box for some of your family and friends just in time for the holidays this year. ddnvr.com and check all that out. For Eric, Harrison, Patrick, and AJ, I am Jesse Montano. Thank you guys so much for listening to the DNVR Sports Podcast, and we'll talk to you guys next time.